Right about here, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to get yourself and your soul together.
Hey, show the cards.
Somebody's gonna get them, and somebody's gonna get them put.
Hey, boy! Hey, boy!
It's a very, very personal meeting.
Oh! And what the hell kind of description is that?
You'll be shot for this!
This man will make your bladder splatter!
You ain't nothing!
Okay?
Does go well with it.
Damn shame how they screwed up your show. Nice little program. Not that I ever watched it.
Yeah. Woo! Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Shear, and today, Yin's Love Breaking Bad. Season 5, Episode 6, titled Buyout. And joining me today, Breaking Bad fan, co-worker of mine at VH1, Austin Breslow. Welcome,
hello,
Austin.
Jim. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, and thank you for doing this, and I'm glad we made this a reality.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for maybe three whole days, and here we are.
Because every time we eat lunch together, when we take a break from the Big Morning Buzz, we talk about Breaking Bad, and throughout the weeks, I thought, you know what, I think Austin would be good, and I'm very interested to hear your take on this week's episode, because during lunch today, you said that this was your least favorite episode of Breaking Bad ever?
I think I'm going to, and I watched it again just a little while ago, and I'm going to stick by that claim.
Oh, my gosh!
Yeah, it's controversial. It's going to be a controversial
and I can't wait to get into it, and I'm going to try to sell you on that it was actually a good episode. Now, last week on the show, I said that after every Breaking Bad episode, I'll go to three websites and read their recaps. I read the one at Vulture. I read the one on the Onion's AV Club, and then I read the one on Grantland. Now,
I read Grantland, Vulture, and Entertainment Weekly, but maybe I'll add that other one.
Okay, and then I will add on Entertainment Weekly.
Great.
But the reason I bring that up is because on last week's episode, the writer, and I apologize for not remembering his name, but the writer for Vulture was not a fan of Dead Freight.
No.
Now, were you a fan of Dead Freight?
I was a fan of Dead Freight, yeah, and I have some additional thoughts on it, but just right off the bat, in simple terms, yes, I did like that.
Yeah, I liked it too, and I know it was a stretch of the imagination, but I bought it, because if you go back in the history of Breaking Bad, we stretch our imagination a lot.
Well, Jim, really, that's interesting to say that, because my thesis today in this podcast is about buying into Breaking Bad to the point where we can believe certain things that happen, certain extreme things that happen, and so a certain amount of it has to be grounded in reality so that we can buy into the crazier things. And for me, the train heist worked because I bought into it.
Okay, well, first, all right, this is, I'm excited. So first, let's just recap the episode. You can chime in whenever you want. We begin with the fallout of Todd. As you know, at the end of Dead Freight, Todd pulled out a gun, and he shoots Dirt Bike Kid in the head. And then we see Jesse scream, no! So it opens with a very creepy montage. We see the canisters again, the plastic jugs, and we know that they are going to dispose of the bike and the body. Jesse punches Todd after he says, hey, shit happens. It comes to a vote. They decide to keep Todd on the squad. In this episode, he's on the team. In this episode, Mike is followed by the DEA because Mike is Mike. Of course he knows that the DEA is following him. After the fallout with the kid and after Mike notices that the DEA is not going to get off his trail, both Mike and Jesse say that they are out. They're like, you can keep your methylamine. We're going to sell our methylamine to a contact we had in the Gus Fring era. So when they try to sell their meth, the businessman, very, very smart, he said, 666 gallons. That's an odd number. It seems like it should be 1,000. Is there something you're not telling me? And then he puts two and two together, and he knows that there is a third partner, and he might know that it's Heisenberg, because Mike will not give him a direct yes or no if the blue meth will be off the streets. Very interesting that the number was 666, also the mark of the beast. We have the famous dinner scene, the soon-to-be-famous dinner scene with Skyler, Walt, and Jesse. Near the end of the episode, it is a showdown between Mike versus Walt. Walt comes to steal the methylamine. Mike's like, I knew this was going to happen. He's like, I got something to do, so I'm going to tie you up, but you better be here when I come back. Walt uses his MacGyver skills, gets out of the little plastic handcuff, and at the end of the episode, Mike confronts Walt and Jesse with his gun, and then Jesse's like, don't shoot, we have a way where you'll get your money, I'll get my money, and Walt can do his thing, and then at the end of the episode, Walt says, everybody wins. So, Austin...
Jim.
Go off. The floor is yours.
That was a great recap. Let me recap my comments, which was that Breaking Bad, when some crazy things happen in Breaking Bad, we usually buy into them. I'm using the word buy because the episode was called Buyout. This is very meta. So the things that are grounded in reality help us believe the train heist, help us believe all of the crazy things that happen throughout the series. And I love that. And I love Breaking Bad. I love that we know these characters. We know how they would react. We know the community of Albuquerque, even if it's not the real Albuquerque, it's Albuquerque within the show.
Mm-hmm.
They have created a world, as any good television show does, that we can feel like we are part of. There is a community that we are part of. We know the characters, we know where they eat, and how they live, and what they do. And if they surprise us, there's a reason why they surprise us. If a character changes the way that they behave, it's always very clear why that happens. And so, you know, we are able to sort of go along with them on the ride. The problem that I have with this episode is that there were too many inconsistencies, and too many of these characters did things that they normally wouldn't do that I just couldn't believe. And it really took me out of what was happening.
Okay,
and
well, just that, start with one.
That the advancements that I thought were going to be made in this episode did not happen.
Okay, so, well, hey, wait. Before you give your instances, at lunch today, you said that you thought this episode should have gone one way, and it went completely the other way. So, in Austin's perfect world, how should this episode have gone?
I thought, because the episode was called Buyout, that Walt was going to convince Mike to go to jail for him. Now, I know this sounds extreme.
What?
I know this sounds extreme. I thought that there was a possibility that Walt was going to find out about Mike's granddaughter, because I don't think Walt knows about the granddaughter at this point.
Okay.
And that he was going to say, and I the upcoming episode, spoiler alert, is called Say My Name. That's episode 7. That will be next week. I thought he was going to convince Mike to go to Hank and the DEA and say, I am Heisenberg. I did this. Gus was a horrible man. Gail Bedeker was our chemist. But I was involved. The case is closed. And he would go maybe off to jail. And Walt would be able to make money that he could give to the granddaughter, the money that was taken away from from Mike by the DEA. That to me seemed like a Breaking Bad twist that could happen, something along those lines. What happened instead?
Well, first of all, I don't think Mike would ever do that. Mike is the master of his domain.
I think that Mike, for whatever reason, and we still don't know who Mike's daughter is or his son is, whoever's the parent of his grandchild. There's so much more to Mike that we don't know. He, clearly, the way he behaves toward Jesse, he's missing being a father figure to something to someone. I feel like his granddaughter's father was his son, and that person is dead or gone. There's some sort of relationship there, and so he loves his granddaughter more than anything. At this point, all this guy wants is to make enough money that he can give to his granddaughter. That's what Mike wants. That's Mike's motivation at this point, and he's pissed at the DEA that they have taken it away from him.
Okay.
So that to me would have been an interesting
possibility. Yeah, no doubt about it. It would be interesting. Now, when Mike gets his money, or say, let's just say that Walt agreed to the plan and Mike gets his $5 million, does he stay in town or does he leave? Because I'm pretty sure that in an earlier episode this season, he was talking about getting his buyout and just kind of leaving town.
Right, absolutely. I think that he would.
If he leaves town, he doesn't get to hang out with his granddaughter.
He could take her with. He could work it out. I feel like he would grab his granddaughter and go. We'd never see that. But that's not what happened.
Okay, and another reason why I don't necessarily buy into what you wanted was because we don't know the specific relationship. Does she live with Mike? Does she just visit Mike every so often? Does Mike babysit
Mike
her every day?
We saw Mike in a previous season dropping her off at her house. We saw a blurry female figure at the door, which we thought maybe was Mike's daughter, but as I'm saying, I feel like maybe that's really his daughter-in-law. And that something happened to his son. Because I think that he now is becoming the father figure to Jesse. What we originally thought Walt was to Jesse is clearly not what's happening anymore, because Walt is a horrible man and Jesse is seeing through it. Now Mike is sort of becoming the father figure that Jesse never had, and maybe Jesse's becoming the son that for some reason Mike is missing or doesn't have. That's a guess.
Okay, but and I also think it's very endearing when Mike calls Jesse kid. It's like, oh,
right.
Kid
absolutely.
Does this, kid does it, kid thinks this. So I buy that. Right. All right, so let's go back to your original point, things that characters did in this episode that were uncharacteristic of them from the history of Breaking Bad.
You're telling me that Mike the cleaner, who came in season, was it 2 or 3, the day that Jane died,
yeah,
and came in and noticed everything that was off in the apartment that when authorities came, they would recognize and potentially incriminate somebody. He's Mike the cleaner. He comes in, he sees every detail and thinks of everything. Mike thinks of everything. You're telling me that he decided to, with one plastic handcuff, with a series of objects floating around Walt, attach Walt with a plastic handcuff? Without leaving somebody there to watch him while he left, Mike would never do that. Mike has guys everywhere. Mike has so many guys that would do anything for him if he pays them. He didn't think to get one guy with a gun to stand there while he was talking to the DEA with Saul.
Now,
I don't buy it.
Okay.
Don't buy it.
All right. Well, listen to this. He hooked Walt up to the furnace, right?
Right.
He hooked Mike up to the furnace after they had stayed up all night long. Mike is a senior citizen, as Saul pointed out in this episode. So a senior citizen, even though one of the greatest cleaners of all time, maybe he loses a little something after not getting sleep.
It's possible, Jim, but this is a guy who famously said, no half measures, no half measure.
It actually was a half measure because only one of the hands was tied.
It is a literal interpretation of a half measure, and it was Mike, and that was stupid of Mike to do that. He would never do that.
Is Mike slipping? Can Mike slip?
Well, Mike is sort of become, he's this bad guy that's sort of becoming good. He has no choice, but he's trying to get out of it now. He's always this hardened cop.
Because Austin saw the cleaner, he would have put the gun to Lydia's head and he would have killed Lydia.
Right, Mike the cleaner would have absolutely done that. Yeah, he would have done that. So maybe things are changing, but he wouldn't have been so stupid as to leave at least a little. Shall I continue with a few more examples here, Jim?
Yeah, you will. Let me just say one more thing to defend Mike. Mike was at the Vominos Pest facility, thinking that Walt might show up, not for sure. So when Walt did show up, he's like, oh, okay, my hunch is right, and I do have one of these in my back pocket. So, and when Walt is tied up, in my head, part of me thinks he might try to escape if something's readily available, but if not, he'll wait it out and he'll come up with a better plan when Mike returns. So I didn't necessarily think that Walt was going to have a MacGyver escape.
Mm-hmm.
but we have a difference of opinion. All right, so continue on with the next character.
I have a few other instances here. So this is less of a character and more of you remember Gray Matter?
I was so glad that they brought up Gray Matter again.
I was glad they brought up Gray Matter too, and I knew it had to come back, and that's great. However, the way that Walt presented it, and I believe some of these the reviews that the recaps that we were talking about that we read online, some people brought this up as well, and I absolutely agreed that Walt brought it up almost as if to say that the whole reason he got into this mess in the first place was because of Gray Matter. It could have been, but that has never really been set up. That's something that has weighed on Walt, obviously, heavily. He could have had a lot of money. He doesn't, and that's something that he lives with every day.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't really the impetus for all of these things to happen. And the way that it's sort of like what Walt is at his most vulnerable right now because he's losing his partners, he's possibly losing the product that he needs to do what he needs to do. And the thing that he says, he brings up Gray Matter, and first of all, he asks Jesse if he's heard of Gray Matter. How ridiculous. Why would Jesse have ever heard of Gray Matter?
Maybe it's a company like Procter & Gamble. And people have heard of Procter & Gamble before.
Right, but the fact that Jesse didn't hear of it is reason enough why it makes no sense. Jesse would have heard of Procter & Gamble because it's a household product. He wouldn't have heard of Gray Matter. Gray Matter is some like pharmaceutical, biochemical technology, something. Jesse would never have heard of
that. Jesse might have heard of Pfizer. You don't know
he
if...
Might have. You know, I bet Jesse hasn't heard of Pfizer, believe it or not. That would be my guess. But anyway, the whole point was that Walt has brought this up as if it's the reason for this descent into madness that he... when in reality, the whole Gray Matter, at least the way that it's been set up until now in the series, is that it was one of many things that sort of has set him off. So I thought that was very strange that Walt was referring to Gray Matter in this particular case. It would have been one thing if he used it as an example, but he sort of made it seem like I'm not stopping because my life goal is to get back at the people who screwed me out of this fortune. And that's not Walt's life goal. That was totally lazy writing and totally inconsistent with who Walt is.
So you think that they were trying to say Walt's life goal is to spite Gray Matter?
That's what it came off as. That's what it sounded like.
No.
And I know that that's probably not what they meant. I hope it's not what they meant.
No, it was no.
That's not at all the point of Walt's, you know, descent into this.
To me, I was excited that they brought up Gray Matter, and then Walt's basically saying this has happened to me once before. It's not going to happen again. I lost out on billions and billions of dollars, and now you, Jesse, you're going to make me miss out on billions and billions of dollars again. So
right,
it's like the
right.
old saying.
And I feel like if that was an example to use, that he would have used it in the past in some way, but the fact that he's at his weakest moment right now when he's sitting slumped down in that chair and he's thinking that this might be over for him, the fact that Gray Matter is what he brings up, and it was watch the scene again. It was the way that he said it that made me feel like that was sort of inconsistent and kind of came out of nowhere, and that it was like, oh, yeah, we need to bring Gray Matter back.
But it makes perfectly good sense. There were three people who started Gray Matter, and there are three people who are running this new branch of the meth business. He accepted a buyout before. A buyout is obviously on the mind because Mike and Jesse went out. So, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Right, and I see that example. I respect that example. It was the way that it was presented in this episode. That was, again, out of character. It was something that I couldn't really buy into because it seemed sort of like... And it goes back to the way he asked Jesse, have you heard of Gray Matter? It was like this was writing that was just like setting up something that we were supposed to remember and that is supposed to bring back something from the past. Breaking Bad expertly brings back old characters and old situations and old company names. That's what Breaking Bad's all about. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But this was too forced for me. It was too forced. So that's another example. I think the biggest example of this particular episode forcing things to happen and being a little inconsistent was the concept of this Arizona, this Phoenix distributor that all of a sudden we are finding out about.
Well,
the reason that I feel like this is coming out of nowhere is that these guys are not from Florida. they're from Arizona. They're, mm-hmm. And I know that Mike says, this is a big country, and don't worry, there's meth heads everywhere. Yes, but the series has been building us up to believe that in this world that we sort of tune into every week, that Walt is now the king, and that he started at the bottom with the lowest of the low, like, what was the guy in the first episode, Crazy Eight, and it went on to Tuco, and then Gus got the cartel in Mexico, and we're supposed to believe that the whole cartel is wiped out because he poisoned all of them, and then Gus comes back, and Walt kills Gus, and now Walt is the king of the American Southwest. Yet in the next state over, there's this guy who we've never heard about, who I would think Gus would have done everything in his power one state over to get rid of whoever this was, even though he might be a distributor, and yes, Gus needs distributors. But now, if he is coming off to us as this manufacturer, because that's what he's saying, he wants the meth woman, he doesn't want the meth, mm-hmm. he wants to get rid of this you know, Walt's product, now all of a sudden we're hearing about it, and it's as if he's never been a threat before. If this guy has millions and millions and millions of dollars, and that $10 million for methylamine is nothing, and he's sort of willing to pay that to them, why have we never heard about this guy before? That I don't buy into that.
Okay, I bought into it. I mean, if you have a McDonald's on the street, there's a Burger King a couple blocks down the road, and then there's a Wendy's, and then there's a local mom and pop hamburger joint. So I would assume that Gus was the big man in town, and then I'm sure there's other people that sell drugs, because it wasn't just Gus. And yes, he did wipe out the Mexican cartel, and he had his there, and then when they looked at the maps on past episodes, there was little blue dots all over the West Coast, but I could buy into it that there was another drug dealer, another meth manufacturer in town. And maybe they're striking when the iron's hot, because Gus is now out of business. He's dead.
Right, but the Gus that I know would have removed anybody that would have been competition for him. That is who Gus
well,
was.
Yes.
It feels out of character for me. Even though Gus wasn't even in this episode, I thought this is something that never would have happened because Gus would never have allowed it to happen.
But how does Mike know this guy? Remember what he said?
Well, Mike, he does know him through Gus, absolutely.
Yes.
And that's why, to me, it stood out as a very strange possibility that if this guy ever even hinted that he was interested in creating meth, that Gus would have anything to do with him other than killing him, and that Mike's relationship to him would have been, you know, totally filled with animosity, because this guy was always a threat. It doesn't.
We don't know for sure that he was a threat, though.
We don't, but I don't believe this guy today decided that he had $10 million and was going to decide to start making meth, that all of a sudden now he's going to start making meth. Because in the reality of the show, it's only been probably a couple weeks since Gus died, maybe less.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't buy into that. But my hope is that, going looking to the next episode, that the whole idea that Walt has to make everybody, you know, I'm hoping that he doesn't offer to cook for this guy from Arizona, because that would be a terrible thing.
No, he won't, because he wants to own the business. He wants to be the king. But he doesn't want to work for anyone anymore, so I don't see that happening. And then we see that at the dinner table, where he's like, they've taken everything from me. My wife doesn't want me. The kids moved out of the house. All I have left is this business. And I don't think he wants to work for anyone else anymore, because, you know, we've seen him work at a car wash. We've seen him work at a school. He wants to run his own business. So I don't think he will cook for someone else. Although, did you see the previews for next week?
I did, absolutely.
Where he throws the bag of blue meth down, and they're like, are you Heisenberg? And
right.
I don't know if he said yes or nodded his head, but he's, you know, he wants to be noticed for his good work. That never happened with
absolutely.
Gray matter. All right, so here's a question for you, Austin. Say a couple episodes from now or next season, they kind of explain these things away. Will you revisit this episode and like it better or hate it less?
I will. I'll say the reason this episode really stood out to me is that I go back sometimes and I'll watch episodes from previous seasons, and I will literally sit, even though I've watched it, I know what's going on, and I know what's happening now, I will go, oh my God, I can't, this show is so good. At every turn, I say that, and especially, they're always so good, especially in kind of seasons, about making the last moment of the show such a cliffhanger, such a button on the whole episode, and when it fades to black, you immediately just are so excited.
Yeah.
Just about that episode alone. I don't know if I'm going to feel that way about this episode. If some things are worked out, I guess I could revisit it and say, oh, well, they were sort of setting things up. But knowing that Breaking Bad is so good at setting things up without being heavy-handed, and then seeing this episode where it felt very heavy-handed and where things didn't quite make sense and work out for me, I don't know. It's up there with The Fly as my least favorite Breaking Bad episode to watch.
See, I didn't mind The Fly. Because that showed that Walter White was a perfectionist. He was a perfectionist. And it took a whole episode to show that.
Right. And they had no money, so they had to do an episode where it took place in the thing.
The Fly was a very polarizing episode. I don't even need to say very. It was a polarizing episode.
It was. I did love things about this episode. I love Breaking Bad. I will defend it forever. I like where Skyler's going. I think I might be in the minority there. I think people can't stand Skyler, and I think that's Walt's fault. I think he's creating who she is now. The way that he tells Marie that the reason they are having marital problems is because of her affair. You know, she's totally lost control of who she is, and that the dinner scene is sort of her final straw when she gets up with that bottle of wine. Like she is like, I have lost control of who I am, and I like that. And that dinner scene was great. So there were things that worked in here. But it just wasn't the perfect Breaking Bad package that it could have been.
All right, let me go through a few more things before we let you go. You have time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because I always promise people, I say, we'll do 15 or 20 minutes, and then sometimes it turns into 20 minutes or a half hour. But Austin has passion today.
I could do it for 12 hours.
See, I thought the episode started off poorly, and then it got better, and then I bought it. Here are a few things that I didn't like. I did not like the scene of Mike in the park while the DEA was watching him from afar. Because to me, it was so predictable. I'm like, well, obviously, Mike is Mike. He knows that he's being followed by the DEA. And then when he wrote the note, I'm like, well, obviously, it's going to say F you or screw off or, you know, get lost. And it did. So I thought that was a waste of 5 minutes. Everyone out there listening to the podcast, discuss. I don't know if it was the cold open or right after the cold open. I thought that was kind of clunky, because the last scene from last week, you have Jesse saying, no! And then seemingly, Jesse and Todd don't talk about him killing this kid until hours and hours and hours later.
Yeah, where's Jesse?
One would think that right after Todd killed him, Jesse would have punched him in the face. He wouldn't have let this fester for hours and hours. I'm like, did they discuss it already? No?
Jim, I'm so glad you've come around to see my point of view, that this episode was really about characters being inconsistent and to who we know them as being. Thank you, Jim. I'm glad you've proven me right.
I didn't prove you right. That was just one scene.
All right.
And then another scene that I didn't like, and maybe you can help me answer this, because I think you've seen all 4 seasons within the last year. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I went on a binge for a little while.
Was Saul always Mike's lawyer?
That's a good question. I don't remember Mike ever needing a lawyer. The only time we've seen him in a situation where he's involved with the police is this season when he goes in alone. Which is a great scene. That's an amazing scene. But I don't think. Saul was involved with Gus, and so I think maybe there was some connection there that happened. So they knew of each other, and he might have represented him before.
But in the scene where Mike is going from prison to prison with his lawyer, obviously that's not Saul.
Right.
I have a problem with Saul being Mike's lawyer, because Mike plays it off like, hey, I was just doing security for Los Pollos Hermanos. And they're like, well, I don't know about that. And then when he comes in with Saul, who obviously has a lot of baggage with drug dealers, that kind of gives him away. And I was like, no, Mike would never have Saul as a lawyer. He would have someone else.
Yes, exactly. That's a dead giveaway. That's almost proof enough that Mike is absolutely guilty if he has Saul as his lawyer.
Yes, because how many times has Saul come into the DEA with different drug dealers? I mean, and we don't see them all throughout the years. I mean, we see Jesse meet with Saul, meet with Hank and whatnot. But I'm sure when Saul Goodman comes into the DEA, they just associate Saul with trash criminals.
Exactly. The Mike we know would never have had Saul be his lawyer. So yet again, this is inconsistent.
Yeah, and once again, just a couple small scenes. And to me, and I never say it about Breaking Bad, but it's almost like they needed to have Saul to be Mike's lawyer just to get Saul in an episode of Breaking Bad. It felt kind of forced to me.
He was absent. I feel like he was absent last week, and he wasn't in anything here. And yeah, they needed to bring him in. And also, that scene, it almost did feel like it was filmed very quickly, like the Hank wasn't in this episode, and they kind of threw him in. And I feel like this case is so high profile. That's the thing about this. The stakes are so high for this case. It makes it seem like this is all the DEA is thinking about, that Walt is at the top of his game, Heisenberg's at the top of his game, and you're telling me that Saul and Mike waltz into this office casually on an afternoon, and that it's just Hank and Gomez in there, and that it's like they're chatting, and everything's cool. I mean, this is the biggest case, and they know that Mike is the guy. They've been working on this case for a year. It seemed too easy to me that they would just sort of, Mike and Saul would just go in there, tell off the DEA, and it would sort of all work out. So that Mike could come back and find that the mesalamine's missing. It was like too easy.
Yeah, well, I think they had that scene because Mike came back and he's like, that buys me 24 hours. So that opened up the little plot point where Walt escapes and something's going to happen. So they have 24 hours to
do something
before they start following Mike again. All right, so here, whenever I watch Breaking Bad, I'll do the breakdown of each episode. And then on the side of the piece of paper, I'll write down some thoughts. And I'm going to pick your brain before we go today. And I always say before we go. We might be on for another 20 minutes, who knows. But we'll try to wrap this up. What did you think of Todd with the tarantula in the jar?
I think two things. One, they're screwing with us, and they're saying that Todd is maybe going to use this against them someday. Maybe there are fingerprints on it.
Wow.
I think that they could also mean that Todd is this ruthless serial-killing monster, and that this is his prized possession.
Wow.
That he killed this kid and he is not remorseful about it at all, other than for the sake that it ruins their operation and that he's caused some waves with the people that are alive that he's working with. And the way he's looking at it, because I watched that again my second time through, he's like almost smirking at it like this is his thing. It's like his trophy. And what's interesting is that there's the line that he mentions right before they tell him to leave the room when they're going to talk about him and what they're going to do with him. He mentions that he has an uncle who has connections in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that line?
Yeah, well, yeah, because Jesse brought it up too. He's like, he was just saying that to flex his muscle.
Right. Now, that I feel like is something that is going to come back, maybe even more than the tarantula. I feel like either Walt is going to capitalize on that, and maybe he's going to be able to, you know, off the guys that are in prison, the nine guys, Mike's guys in prison, based on the connection that Todd has. That's going to come back. Whoever Todd's uncle is, we will experience him in some way.
Okay. Maybe, maybe not. But as we say every week, Vince Gilligan uses every part of the buffalo.
Yes. He really does.
I was watching with my wife, and she said that you could also look at that scene and maybe, just maybe, Todd feels some remorse for killing the kid as he looks at the jar in the tarantula.
It could be. It could be. I saw a smirk there, but it could be.
Or it could be a prize, a souvenir. And maybe, because Vince Gilligan uses every part of the buffalo, maybe they go to this kid's family and like, the kid loves collecting tarantulas in jars, and that jar is only specific to this part of the country, so maybe it's a piece of evidence that screws the whole team. We shall see. Dinner scene, I thought was laugh-out-loud funny, with Jesse talking about microwaving lasagna, trying to warm up to Skylar. She's not having any of it. I love the fact, and we discussed this, that they brought up gray matter, because when I was at Comic-Con and they had the Breaking Bad panel, they said, all right, anyone have questions? I ran out of my seat and ran to the front of the line to ask this question. Unfortunately, I didn't get to ask it, but fortunately, the moderator asked Vince if he was going to bring gray matter back. He's like, yes, we will discuss gray matter. And I'm glad that they finally brought it up, because it's been brushed under the rug for the last few seasons.
Right. I want to clarify that I think that gray matter does play an important role. It was how it was brought up that I disagree with.
Austin didn't like the execution of it.
Correct. Didn't feel organic to me.
A scene I did like, consistent with Mike's character, is when he slammed Todd against the fence and he's like, if you ever don't tell me when you bring a gun on a mission, he's like, what is he? I'm gonna stick a gun up sideways up your ass. So I thought that was consistent with that. That's old school Mike.
That is Mike. That's Mike that's not gonna let anything go wrong.
The news report is interesting. I don't know where they're going to go with this lost boy, because obviously every piece of evidence except the tarantula in the jar is gone. And then a line that stuck out with me. There were many money lines in this episode. Of course, I'm in the Empire business. But I love the line that Jesse said to Walt. He said, is a meth empire really something to be proud of? Something to think about.
I also noticed when I was doing a little research, I noticed somebody who recalled a scene a few seasons back where Mike is talking to Jesse. Walt is a lot of men's names. Walt is talking to Jesse, and Walt says, I can't even remember the details, but something about how they were going to get money, but Jesse didn't think it was enough money. And Walt is saying something to the extent of, who are you to turn down $3 million or whatever it is? And right now, tables have turned, literally.
Yes. And I also like the scene, too, where Jesse's like, I know the amount of money you wanted. It was $732,000, and I know this because you were doing mathematical things.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's right. And now he, like he said, all he has left is the business. Next week is episode 7, the second to last episode of the year. And I don't know if you read a lot online or listen to Vince Gilligan interviews, but he said during episode 7, the writing room came to a halt. They hit a dead end. They couldn't figure their way out of it, and it was one of the hardest episodes that they ever had to write.
Wow. It's probably because they did such a bad job writing episode 6 that they were put in a difficult place.
Maybe they're like Austin, and because of the writing in episode 6, they wrote themselves into a corner for episode 7. So I read that interview, or it was on a podcast or something, at the beginning of the season, and I was looking forward to episode 7. I was like, how did they get into the corner there? Like, how did they not know how to finish the episode? So we will get to see this Sunday. Austin.
And I heard that they were excited about episodes 5 and 7. I kept hearing that. So we know that 5 was a big episode, so
yeah.
I believe that 7 will be good too.
And usually in episodic TV, and I'm not saying this for Breaking Bad, but usually, the second to the last episode is always the best. Because if you don't tie up all your loose ends, then you got to kind of hurry up and rush and do it in the final episode. Because you'll see like a lot of season finales are like, well, we got to do this. We got to finalize this. And we got to bring this to a close. And there's got to be closure here. So they usually take their time with the second to the last episode. And if not paced correctly, then the last episode can be put together kind of randomly and not smoothly.
Well, the second to last episode at the end of season 4 was great because it's almost more fun to see them, and it's more realistic when we see them fail the first time.
Yeah.
That's why I like, this season, even when Saul is taking them around to look for places to cook and he shows them a few that don't work. That's a great detail. That is the Breaking Bad world that I buy. I buy into that, and that helps me buy into crazier things. But anyway, the second to last episode last season was almost more compelling than seeing Gus die, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
But with seeing him not die, it was seeing it not quite work. We're almost there, but not yet. So I think episode 7 this season will be good too.
And I would give you a high five if you were sitting next to me right now, because I loved when, I think it was like a paper factory, and as a viewer, you're just like, oh yeah, this is where they're going to cook meth now. And then they came up with a reason why they couldn't cook meth. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, they actually set up lights in this factory and they had a crew and they probably had catering. And guess what? They had to go to another set location. And then they had to go to another. And then another. I'm like, yes, that was brilliant.
Yes, that is Breaking Bad. That's what's so great about this show. That's why the first 3 episodes of season 1 are not just about some guy who becomes a meth cook and starts killing people, and he's already there. we see how awkward it is for him to dispose of the bodies and how painful it is for him to have to kill somebody. And, you know, that's the show. Breaking Bad takes time, and that's when things don't happen too easily. That's when it's an enjoyable show.
I know, but they only got 16 episodes, so maybe they
had,
they had 8 and 8. So maybe if Vince Gilligan and AMC and Breaking Bad, and they came to a decision where they got 13 episodes this season and 13 episodes next season, maybe it would have been paced out to your liking.
Right.
Well, Austin, thank you for doing this. I believe on record, this is the longest Breaking Bad recap we've had.
Oh, boy. Sorry about that.
No. We didn't go an hour. I think we're around like 40 minutes or so. But I appreciate your opinion. And, you know, I know you'll keep on watching. And I hope for the sake of this episode that Vince Gilligan and crew explain themselves away in future episodes so Austin can come back to episode 6 and enjoy it.
Great.
Any parting words, Austin, before you leave?
I love Breaking Bad. I love it. Best show on television. It really is. Jim, I'll see you at work.
So for Austin Breslow, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see Jens later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same goodnight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.